Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a few things that we want to kind of cover, and what we want to do is set up the shows for this week. And so technically what we're looking at doing is we're going to kind of cover the last of the content that we've planned on covering until next week. And next week we're going to start getting into the ratification debates again. So we've basically gone about 6 months into this. And I want to do this early because as we move through, because it takes time to get through the ratification debates, and I want you to actually hear and understand. And I know you've probably heard, but you know, every time I read something, I usually get something more out of it. And I'm hoping that you realize that the importance of this content. This show is not literally about entertaining. I really don't care to make funny and or witty comments. What I really care is saving our Constitution. I'm not sure how serious you are, but we're very serious about the peril that we're facing. I mean, the reality is we are at the precipice of losing our liberties and those protected liberties that the Constitution provides us, basically a sanctuary. So what we're trying to do, and the reason why we go through this on a regular basis is really due to the fact that what happened, what they said during these ratification debates is how the Constitution was defined. Now, the letter that I'm going to cover today, which is a letter from James Madison to John G. Jackson, this is exactly what Madison states. I mean, this letter supports everything that I'm telling you. So, when we go through the ratification debates, I'm just trying to help prepare and set the stage for you. Going through the ratification debates, we are literally giving you the words that these men in the various states defined. Why is this important? Because as you hear these words, you will start seeing the direct contrast and the conflicts that are occurring regarding how they define the Constitution and how the Constitution is being perverted, subverted, and how the federal government is operating well outside our bounds. Our problem is not COVID-19. Our problem is that our government and our public servants are not in compliance to the Constitution. If they were, they would not have been able to declare the stay-home orders and destroy your business and destroy this nation. They literally have, and they've bamboozled the public into believing that they can do anything necessary and proper for your benefit, or supposedly for your benefit. They try to tell you that this is all for your benefit. We're saving lives. The only thing that will truly save lives when it comes to government is full compliance of the Constitution. So I do appreciate, and I really am thankful for those of you who listen on a regular basis, because I think you get it. I think you understand. Listen to other people for entertainment. If you're only looking for entertainment, then you're not looking for the solution. I truly believe there are millions of people out there that are thirst. I mean, they're an overwhelming thirst for the truth and a solution. I believe that there are people starving for the supplication of a true solution in getting government into compliance. I don't want to believe that there are people that say, you know what, this is good enough. There's not. That path does not take us to a destination where your children and your grandchildren will be able to enjoy and relish a life of liberty. They're already, I mean, seriously, they are already dictating and compelling us almost in every facet of our lives. This is what happens when you allow a government to start operating on the sense of nobility. Oh, well, this is better for you. You know, we're going to save the planet by controlling how much water your toilet flushes or how bright your light bulb can illuminate your room. Folks, we've got to stop. We've got to take a stand. And that's why I'm betting that that's why so many people are starting to listen to the show. And I really thank you for that. Let me also emphasize that we need to grow this show. We're going to do everything we possibly can in the next several months to try to help expand our presence, or at least the awareness of people and what the heck we're doing with Red State Talk Radio and the direction we are trying to lead in. Because remember, what we're trying to do in uniting people on core principles so that we can preserve what is truly best for your individual liberty and your individual sovereignty. And there is nothing greater. There should be nothing more important other than maybe your salvation, your marriage, and those types of things. I mean, those real, those immediate things in your life, you know, protecting your loved ones. I mean, family has to be important, right? I mean, we've got to be there when our family needs us. But when it comes down to what is best for your posterity, posterity, what is best for your children, your grandchildren, and so forth, is that they enjoy a life of liberty, being able to go to church and worship and be able to, you know, express themselves religiously, to be able to express their conscience. We're at a point now where they're tearing down statues. I saw a statue of, I'm trying to remember where it was, but it was basically, it was a statue of the Emancipation, not necessarily the Emancipation Proclamation, but when Texas finally freed their slaves, there's this big, huge memorial for that. You know, and I was thinking to myself, you know, in this day of being offended, where are those Native Americans, the Indians, where are they to say, we got to tear this down because this offends us? They got emancipated and we didn't. Everybody can always take a look and have a reason to be offended with what you have. Welcome to America, the land where you have the right to be offended, but your feelings and your offenses don't supersede the rights of others, if you understand what I'm saying. And so we're here to try to help you with a constitutional perspective. And more importantly, we're trying to give you all the facts. I truly believe that you'd rather hear exactly what Madison said instead of GR just paraphrasing and then getting into the news, because the news really doesn't matter. The only reason we read the news is just to give you the magnitude of the problem and then just basically poke you in the eye and say, what's it going to take? Is this good enough for you? Are you really going to sit here and let them steal your property? I mean, when you park your car out on the street, you just leave the car unlocked with the keys in it? Then why is it that we're doing the exact same thing with our liberty? Why is it that we're allowing government to come right along and take our liberty? We've locked it down. I'm telling you, the Constitution is a locked car and the keys aren't in it, and you've got a club on it along with an alarm and a disabling device. I mean, there are so many levels of security that the Constitution has applied to that property of yours called liberty. if you are leaving it unlocked, unarmed, and with the keys in it, without a club and all of these other things, then you deserve to lose your liberty. You deserve to have your children suffer for the rest. Because if you understand the magnitude of where we are as a society, once liberty is lost, it is gone until society is destroyed. Because we've got the Big Brother movement with what China is doing. And watch, I'm going to probably have a denial of service happen this week. But what China is doing with their artificial intelligence and the way they're monitoring, you know, their society and how that is going to get rolled out throughout the world, the model system is in China. I'm telling you, do you hear anything coming from the tech companies that are supporting China, such as Google, such as Apple, excuse me, all of these other technology companies that are being deathly silent to what is going on in China and why they're actually supporting the suppression and the loss of liberty. Folks, these are the most dangerous times our society, the race of humanity has ever faced. What we're going into and the peril that we're facing is far greater than Hitler, is far greater than than Napoleon, than Mao, than Stalin and Lenin. What we're facing is a permanency, because even back then there was still some equality where you could have resistance and so forth. The way that the military and force can be projected, it is unimaginable how they can rein their fury down. We're going to go into a promo. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
I cannot express the level of frustration I am feeling when I'm dealing with, I'll just call them quasi-conservatives, these folks that are asserting, oh, well, you know, we're conservative. We're teaching you about the Constitution. There's all sorts of organizations that are, I just hate to say it, but they're a complete waste of time. And that's just because, yeah, they may have really good education and insight regarding the Constitution, but they're not a part of the solution. Are you a part of the problem or a part of the solution? If you're not a part of the solution, then they're a part of the problem. There's really no other way to slice this. The fact of the matter is, the only way we're going to actually be able to make headway is by taking action. Remember, knowledge is power if it is only applied. You have to apply what you're learning here, folks. That's why we're going to be working. And after we get into these, go through the ratification debates, I should have, because I just finished, oh, by the way, newsflash, I just finished my article regarding Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. There is no doubt in my mind the 14th Amendment was another gift from the divine hand of providence. That, because if you look at it, it was never really applied. The only Section 1 out of the 14th Amendment was something that was really examined and has been in the forefront regarding government and our policies regarding due process, regarding the privileges and immunities that we as citizens are protected now from the state and local government. But more importantly, when you look at Section 2, Section 3, and Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, I mean, those are pieces of gold. And we're not using that leverage that supreme portion of the law of the land, those three sections, 2, 3, and 4. And if we did, we would be able to clarify and, you know, actually get rid of, I mean, how many people do you know complain about corruption? I could go on and on. And again, you can tell how frustrated I am. So there's a few things that I do need to get through, and we got to get through this content so that we can actually do marketing. I'm going to be doing marketing for the next 2 days. And at the end of the week, we should have, for you and your listening pleasure, two really good interviews. One interview with Trevor Lawton and another interview with Sheriff Mack. And I want you to understand that if you haven't seen that video of my interview with Trevor Lawton, he is fully on board. He doesn't want to be doing this. I'm sure he would love to be making millions of dollars, but he would rather have secure liberty. I saw him last week, and I mentioned this. I may not have mentioned this, but just really quick, you can tell by the passion that this man has that he truly is in this for the outcome, not for the money. So with that, a couple of things I still have to say is this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. The other little thing I do want to say is that you, because we're at election time, you need to make your public servant, whoever is going to represent you or ask you for your vote in this election, you need to make them make a formal statement as to how they feel about your liberties being stolen. So with that, let me kind of just jump straight into what we've got to cover here. This letter is a letter, again, from James Madison to John George Jackson. This is a letter that Madison wrote at Montpelier, December 27th, 1821. So Madison's retired. Madison is no longer president and no longer working as a public servant and enjoying life with his beautiful wife, Dolly Madison, and just kind of getting the farm going and so forth. I will tell you that Madison struggled his life financially. It's not like he was like Jefferson that was living in debt all of his life and having to constantly sell this or do this to, you know, getting another loan, remortgaging more of his property or selling some of his property, selling his books. But Madison, he understood he needed to make and do a good job in securing life for Dolly. And so one of the things that he had that he felt was worth, you know, it was a national treasure, and he felt it was going to make a lot of money, was his notes on the Constitutional Convention. And it was his intent that they would be published posthumously. In other words, after he passed, they would be published, and the proceeds from the publishing of his notes would help Dolly financially to the level that she wanted. And see, here's the beautiful thing. Look at this at a macro view. Here's a man that if he was all about money, if he wanted to just, you know, secure the quality of his life or improve the quality of his life at the drop of a hat, instead of struggling and making do with what he had. Here's a man that had these notes that everybody wanted. John G. Jackson had just sent him this letter. Please release us your notes on the convention. And this letter is his reply to that. He was not about to do that. That money and that treasure was set aside for Dolly Madison. Plus, he didn't want people to look at, you know, the discussions and the debates of the Constitutional Convention, because in his letter we're going to read, he's basically saying it doesn't matter what we thought. It doesn't matter how we discussed this and how we defined it. What matters is how we define this to the states at the time of ratification. And that's exactly what he says. Or I'm paraphrasing. Okay. Anyway, so this is what Madison says. With respect to that portion of the mass which contains the voluminous proceedings of the convention, it has always been my intention that they should someday or other see the light. In other words, he's going to get them published. But I have always felt at the same time the delicacy attending such a use of them, especially at an early season. In other words, you know, hey, let's not worry about what we thought. Let's really focus on how this thing was defined. He didn't want these to take precedence over what the Constitution really meant, in contrast to how they defined it in the ratification debates. That's how important the ratification debates were. The result of my latest reflections on the subject, I cannot more conveniently explain than by the enclosed extract from Letter 1, confidentially written since the appearance of the proceedings of the convention, as taken from the notes of Chief Justice Yates. Of this work, so he's included some letter, a confidential letter. Of this work, I have not yet seen a copy regarding Chief Justice Yates. From the scraps thrown into the newspaper, I cannot doubt that the prejudices of the author guided his pen, and that he has committed egregious errors, at least in relation to others as well as myself. So apparently Yates kind of aggrandized some of the things he was saying and doing. That most of us carried into the convention a profound impression produced by the experienced inadequacy of the old Confederation and by the monitory examples of similar ones, ancient and modern, as to the necessity of binding the states together by a strong constitution is certain. The necessity of such a constitution was enforced by the gross and disreputable inequities which had been prominent in the internal administrations of most of the states. And to highlight that, the Shade Rebellion was a huge red flag for them. Nor was the recent and alarming insurrection headed by Shays in Massachusetts without a very, very sensible effect on the public mind. Such indeed was the aspect of things that in my eyes, of all the best friends of liberty, a crisis had arrived, which was to decide whether the AMN, whether the American experiment was to be a blessing to the world, or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired. Republican cause. Anyway, and I think he was, you know, that right there was not just the concept of the Republican form of government, but if you understand that the 1798 resolutions and the political coup, the political revolution that him and Jefferson had done, it was the Republican. Oh, there we go. It's almost time for me to take some medicine. Anyway, it was the Republican Party that him and Jefferson stood up in overtaking the nation. And so with that, I just want to make sure that you understand when he's talking about which the Republican cause had inspired, he's not here to say so, but I truly believe that that was the paradigm and the shift. Because you got to understand, when Jefferson and Madison initiated the Republican Party in 1799, in less than a year, they actually overthrew the Federalists and slowly but surely gained more and more ground to where Monroe, and this is about the time when Monroe is being elected unanimously. Remember, Monroe got elected in 1820 unanimously. So with that, moving on, it's interesting to point these types of things out, because I believe that what he's referring to, and I truly believe this Republican cause that he's talking about that was inspired, was that political movement to secure the direction of this nation from going away from a big government to one respecting individual privileges, immunities, individual liberty, and sovereignty. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so getting back to what Madison was saying regarding the desire to look at, you know, his notes on the Constitutional Convention. And as I kind of alluded to, he already pointed to the Republican inspiration within this American experiment, that we were finally on this, in this direction and on the track of individual liberty and individual sovereignty and limited government. He obviously had a huge awakening, you know, the slash or hashtag woke, woke now. He had a huge awakening in understanding what the heck this Republican cause was and what they were actually fighting in 1798. The concept of this limited and defined government went sideways because the Federalists chose to derail it for big government. And so that's why he basically said, or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired. So moving on, he says, and what is not to be overlooked, the disposition to give to a new system all the vigor consistent with Republican principles was not a little stimulated by a backwardness in some quarters toward a convention for the purpose, which was ascribed to a secret dislike to popular government and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way for a form of government more congenial with monarchical and aristocratical predilections. And so, yeah, and I do realize this, that when I read, I'm not a professional reader like you get in audiobooks. And so I hope that you actually take the time to find this document. If you want to have the link to it, let me know. I will send you the link to where you can get this document. Reading documents like this for yourself is a level of reinforcement. So there are some people that really get more out of it by hearing somebody read it to them. Some people have a struggle, I guess, you know, how our minds work differently. Some people have a hard time understanding what is being said to them when they're reading with their eyes, but when sometimes they hear. So anyway, hopefully this really helps, though, because hearing exactly what he said and how he said it is very important. And if you want to actually read this for yourself, and I ask that you do that, you go and actually read these things, so that you have a chance to even ponder on these things at a deeper level. This is how we gain this understanding or this knowledge of what the heck they're trying to say, what the framers were saying. Anyway, moving on, he says, this view of the crisis made it natural for many in the convention to learn more than was perhaps in strictness warranted by a proper distinction between causes temporary, as to some of them doubtless were, and causes permanently inherent in popular frames of government. It is true, as to have been sometimes suggested, that in the course of discussions in the convention, where so much depended on compromise. Now, see, if you read my part of section 3, the most important the most significant compromise America had ever dealt with actually was in that Constitutional Convention, when the 10 states chose to, you know, allow 3 states to say, hey, you know, we're leaving if you don't make this about slavery. I'm appalled by the concept that 10 states were actually, you know, were held hostage and surrendered to these 3 measly states in the South. They should have told them to pack their bags and go. We will see you when you're ready to come back after, you know, you've been attacked a few times by maybe Spain, Britain, and so forth. Anyway, I believe America should have stayed on the high ground. And unfortunately, I truly believe that that political compromise was not by the divine hand of providence. I do not believe that the divine hand of providence wanted America to suffer, but these men made calculated decisions, and they obviously, this was the most costly decision in America's history. Anyway, moving on, he says, where so much depended upon compromise, the patrons of different opinions often set out on negotiating grounds more remote from each other than the real opinions of either were from the point at which they finally met. For myself, having from the first moment of maturing a political opinion down to the present one, never ceased to be a votary of the principle of self-government. I was among those most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it, and with the view was willing to give to a government resting on the foundation as much energy as would ensure the requisite stability and efficacy. It is impossible. I could never say efficacy if I wasn't reading it. Anyway, forgive me. It is impossible that in some instances this consideration may have been allowed a weight greater than subsequent reflection within the convention or the actual operation of the government would, or the actual operation of the government would sanction. It might be remarked also that it sometimes happened that opinions as to the particular modification or a particular power of the government had a conditional reference to others, which combined therewith would vary the character of the whole. But, and this is the most important part of this, it's a small little paragraph, but it's the most important. But whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. No one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps, whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. My friends, I'm here to tell you that he's precisely stating that the ratification debates are probably the most important documents that we possess if we are going to save this Constitution. We have to rely upon the fundamentals of contract law. How that contract was sold, those are the legally binding definitions and terms of this contract, period, point blank. It doesn't matter if Madison came back and said, well, this is what this meant, and this is what that meant. It doesn't matter because he cannot recollect all the things that were said in defining and clarifying that Constitution. From Nicholas to Governor Randolph to Iredell, he wasn't in all the different conventions. What matters is how the nation, which is the collective states, how they were sold on this Constitution. And this is why I keep telling you that there is zero evidence that the Constitution and the federal government, you know, is a living document and they have basically general powers to do whatever they feel necessary and proper because they're this supreme government. They're not the supreme government. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land as long as what the government is exercising is in congruence with and agrees with the enumerated powers that they're supposed to be doing within that Constitution. That's it in a nutshell. Anyway, he goes on and says, the departures from the true and fair construction of the instrument have always given me pain and always experienced my opposition when called for. The attempts and the outset of the government to defeat those safe, if not necessary, and those politic, if not obligatory, amendments introduced in conformity to the known desires of the body of the people and to the pledges of many, particularly myself, when vindicating and recommending the Constitution, was an occurrence not a little ominous. And it was soon followed by indications of political tenets and by rules, or rather the abandonment of all rules, of expounding it, which were capable of transforming it into something very different from its legitimate character as the offspring of the national will. I wish I could say that constructive innovations had altogether ceased. Whether the Constitution has divided the powers of government between the states in their separate and in their united capacities tends to an oppressive aggrandizement of the general government or to an anarchical independence of the state governments. Is it a problem which alone can absolutely determine it? Is much to be wished that the division as it exists, or as it may be made with the regular sanction of the people, may effectually guard against both extremes. Now, it sounds like the dogs of war are starting to warm up because you could probably hear the hounds barking. But anyway, let me move on. For it cannot be doubted that an accumulation of all power in the general government would as naturally lead to a dangerous, excuse me, would lead to a dangerous accumulation in the executive hands I'll have to get back to this. And I'll start off with where we just left off so that I can keep it coherent for you. Forgive me. And we will be dealing with the dogs of war and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so as we were just kind of wrapping up, I'll just kind of take off, like I said, where we left off. For it cannot be doubted that an accumulation of all power in the general government would as naturally lead to a dangerous accumulation in the executive hands as the resumption of all powers by the several states would end in the calamities incident to the contiguous and rival sovereigns, to say nothing of its effect in lessening the security for sound principles of administration within each of them. There have been epochs when the general government was evidently drawn a disproportion of power into its vortex. There have been others when states threatened to do the same. At the present moment, it would seem that most are aiming at encroachments on the other. One thing, however, is certain, that in the present condition, the temper of the community, the general government cannot long succeed in encroachments contravening the will of the majority of the states and of the people. Its responsibility to these would, as was proved on a conspicuous occasion, quickly arrest its career. If at this time the powers of the general government be carried to unconstitutional lengths, it will result of a majority of the states and people actuated by some impetuous feeling or some real or supposed interest overruling the minority, and not of successful attempts by the general government to overpower both. And so he's kind of talking about, you know, how the government, if right now it consolidated all power and became like it is today, they would wake up to it. But he doesn't realize that over the course of a century, they slowly accumulate these powers and start asserting themselves more and more. And they use the education system to indoctrinate. I mean, if Madison came back today, if the framers came back today, they'd go, wow, we never envisioned that it would get this evil and this dark. In estimating the greater tendency, that's why I say only the divine hand of providence understood what we would be facing and precisely understood what we would need and gave us everything within this Constitution and the amendments necessary for pulling ourselves out of the rut and saving liberty in the world. Anyway, in estimating the greater tendency in the political system of the Union to a subversion or a separation of the states composing it, there are some considerations to be taken into account, which have been little adverted to by the most oracular authors on the science of government. And that's a tough word to say. Somebody that's actually, you know, orates, anyway, and which are to be but imperfectly developed as yet by our own experience. Such are the size of the states, the number of them, the territorial extent of the whole, and the degree of external danger. Each of these, I'm persuaded, will be found to contribute to its impulse to the practical direction of our great political machine is to take. We learn for the first time the second law sustained by your parental affections. You will no doubt the sincerity with which all partake the grief produced by both. I wish we could be better consolations than the condoling expression of it. These must be derived from other sources. Afflictions of every kind are the onerous conditions charged on the tenure of life. And obviously he's getting kind of deep here. And it is a silencing, if not a satisfactory vindication of the ways of heaven to man, that there are but few who do not prefer an acquiescence in them to surrender of the tenure itself. We have had for a great part of the last and present years much sickness in our family, and among the black members of it, not a little mortality. Miss Madison and Payne were so fortunate to escape altogether. I was one of the last attacked, and not dangerously. The disease was a typhoid fever. At the present, we are all well and unite in very good wish to Mrs. Jackson and yourself, and to Mary and the rest of your family. Very sincerely yours, James Madison. This is it. So the very last paragraph is obviously on the personal side, but if you understand the importance that Madison was trying to convey when they were asking him for his notes on the Constitutional Convention, he knew that everybody wanted this. That's why he basically left this for Dolly, so that she could actually have some financial relief when her needs, as she grew older, became greater, because you realize that when people get older, they can do less for themselves. So he wanted to make sure he did as much as he could in his passing for Dolly. I believe she was somewhat younger than him, and so he kind of knew his mortality would probably expire, or his mortal life would expire long before hers. What I want to do at this point, because we have about 5 minutes left, the article that I just wrote regarding Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, because this is what I really need to get into with you. We need to actually discuss exactly what this section does. Section 3, as it has been defined by, let's just say, you know, by me, and as it's been defined by Congress. And as a matter of fact, I think what I'm going to do, because it's really painful to go to the Congressional Globe and pull in every single page. There is 263 pages that discussed within the Congressional Globe that discussed the 14th Amendment. And so, and I added a couple of extras that, you know, happened to talk about the Freedmen's Bureau and those types of things. And actually equal footing for the states as well. there's a nice little powerful image on that that talks about the importance of making sure that all the states that come into the union have equal footing. And how I believe this is when Congress started perverting that and no longer allowing states to come into equal footing. I believe that if I was a part of the myopic Western states and equal footing to get the state sovereignty back and take away all this federal land that they don't unconstitutionally possess, that's where I would start. I would go through the Congressional Globe and pull all those things out. But anyway, back to the 14th Amendment. Section 3 basically says this: no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or in any state, who have previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall, in other words, that's the oath that they're supposed to take, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. So in other words, they can't be, so they create this huge preamble of anybody that has ever taken oath of office cannot be in office or ever obtain office again if they have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, in other words, against supporting the Constitution, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Now, when they talk about enemies thereof, they're literally talking about the enemies of the Constitution. So this whole, the first two lines, no person, it starts off with no person shall be, and then they have this huge list of public servants. So let's just replace all of this long line of public servants and just rephrase this to no person shall be public servant who take an oath, because it's right in here, who having previously taken an oath, ... to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion. So in other words, no person shall be a public servant who have taken an oath of office to support the United States and have engaged in an insurrection or rebellion against the same, against the Constitution, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof the Constitution. In other words, anybody that is in office or is seeking office, and they are actively or have in the past supported rebellion against the Constitution, not the U.S. government, but the Constitution and its laws, those people must be removed and banned from office. Folks, you got to wake up. You've got to understand the importance of this one section in the Constitution. How many people out there have been complaining that, oh, the politicians can't be held accountable? Here's your tooth. As a matter of fact, this is a whole set of teeth. These are shark's teeth that can actually, just shred every single politician that is undermining our Constitution. I can't emphasize this enough. I shudder to think that we let this time go, that we actually do not use the Constitution as our weapon. As I've constantly said, if we're not using our Constitution as our weapon and as our defense, we will lose these battles. And I'm telling you, this is the greatest offensive weapon the Constitution gives us in taking back this republic. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.